Nice to see you all again. So, we have a few late people today. I'll pass around the attendance sheets, and we forgot to sign them last week, so perhaps on the end of it, if you could just put today's date and last week's date so that they can sign them both. Today's 5th, yeah? All right, so from chapter 4, we've covered up to we've covered the various questions that the sages, Hare Krishna, of Naimisharanya, the second lot of questions that they have done, and what do we cover after that? What do we cover after the second lot of questions of the sages of Naimisharanya? Mahabharata, development of, yes, of the Vedic literature, that's right. Division of the one Veda into four, then the Puranas. What's that? That for the Dvijabandhu, the appearance of Vyas, at the overlapping of the Dwapara and Kali Yugas, in one sense, and Srila Vyasadeva compiled, wrote down the Vedic literatures, which were previously just in a the form of sound, and then he divided it so that the people in Kali Yuga, who would face many anomalies, would be able to still derive some benefit and be able to understand the essential portions of the Vedas. And Srila Vyasadeva, in dividing the one Veda into four, what was his reason there? Yeah. And to make what easier to understand? What would they be doing with that knowledge? Yeah. Basically, fruit of activities, all the religious occupational duties, not so much jnana kanda or yoga kanda, but the karma kanda sections, to some degree, especially that was. They needed to perform their occupational duties within the Varnashram as far as possible in a very pious way. So he simplified everything that they could do that and concentrate on the particular knowledge that they required and be able to understand the Sanskrit language in a slightly simplified way. And then, of course, to make it even easier to execute the purpose of the Vedas, the essential teachings of the Vedas was there in the Bhagavad Gita, which is a chapter of the Mahabharata. And then, of course, we described how Srila Vyasadeva then compiled, after doing all that, what was his next compilation? Vedanta Sutra, yeah. So Vedanta Sutra is the conclusion, and the the essence, essential statement in very concise codes of the five Vedas. The four original Vedas, which are called Shruti, right? So Rig, Atharva, Yajur, Sama, there. That's the Shruti, that which is heard. And then the Puranas, the Itihastas, the Mahabharata, that is the Smriti. So what is the Vedanta Sutra? It's Nyaya. So Nyaya is logic and reason. So you have Shruti, Smriti, and Nyaya. Nyaya is logic and reason. What's that, Vedanta?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's some, you know, as we've described, for you know, there's a general category and that we can place things under, but sometimes when we look at more specific information, we can categorize it. But it definitely is nyaya, is logic and reason. But it's not wrong to, you know, put it under smriti. It's not wrong to do that. But that's right, yeah. So I'm just giving you a little we didn't cover this. I'm just giving you a little bit more information. You'll come across these statements and you think, gee, we didn't cover that. So this won't come up in one of your exams, but you will quite often hear Prabhupada very often will speak of you know, the Vedanta Sutra as nyaya. So you have three types of sastras: Shruti, Smriti, and nyaya. But it's not wrong as it's categorized there under smriti. So then, after discussing all that, we come to today's discussion on reasons why Srila Vyasadeva may have felt dissatisfied, you know, even after compiling all those literatures. And we begin from verse 26, and we see there that alright, now we see it describes there that who's speaking this verse? Suta Goswami, yeah. That his mind was still not satisfied, although engaged in working for the total welfare of all people. So that leads us into this discussion. So then he began to reflect on that. Then we see in text 28 and 29 that he describes that he has abided by all the rulings and has shown the import of disciplic succession through the explanation of the Mahabharata. And a very important statement in there, while we're on that, is that in the purport, Prabhupada says that in this age, the Mahabharata is more essential than the Vedas. And we discussed a little bit last week how the Mahabharata and the histories are more appropriate for people in this day and age.
That's the question. Mm. And why are we
supposed to reading it? Because now, we can read the Mahabharata. The problem is that I remember when I was a young brahmachari, we wanted to read the Mahabharata. Of course, there were no editions except for some coming from India. And many of them, the problem is within the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita. That's not a problem, but the problem is that that Bhagavad Gita, which is the essential teachings of the Mahabharata, has been misinterpreted. So when people read the Mahabharata, all the many, many misinterpretations of Bhagavad Gita end up being the philosophy of the Mahabharata. You know, therefore, you know, apart from Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, practically, you know, they're all impersonalists. They all remove Krishna from the, you know, Bhagavad Gita as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They all want to make him impersonal. So therefore, you see that not just the chapter on the of the Bhagavad Gita in the Mahabharata, but literally that impersonal interpretation is there right throughout, you know, the stories. So there was one Indian copy which the devotees, I think it came from Prabhupada, that was okay to read. It was by Kamala Subramania or something like that. There's some translation which, you know, difficult to read because it was in sort of old English and a little bit of Indian English. So it was, you know, it was quite difficult to read, but at least it didn't have an impersonal interpretation, so it was closer. So the only reason we're not recommended to, you know, read the Mahabharata is because they're all full of nonsense philosophy. But yes, Mahabharata is good. And the Bhagavad Gita is particularly important. Yep. Some devotees have done it, but of course it would be nice to have it purported.
Yes, yeah. So, I'm reading Krishna Dharma,
yeah.
Like a short version.
That's right.
It's really, no, Bhagavad Gita is 7 pages.
Yes.
Just maybe.
Yeah. So, yeah, Mahabharata is good. At the same time, you know, the real attraction of the Mahabharata for the devotees is Krishna and his devotees, whereas the attraction for ordinary people is the, you know, the war, the politics, the intrigue, the romance, you know, it's like that. Devotees read the Mahabharata and speak on the Mahabharata because it helps to reveal the nature of Krishna and his relationship with his devotees. But you know, in reading the Mahabharata, this there is still, you know, to find the parts dealing directly with Krishna and then to be able to really understand that in you know, proper Krishna consciousness with a proper understanding, you have to sift through a lot of, you know, politics and, you know, this and that and fighting and, you know, so many things. So, it is still, it still makes it, a devotee, of course, sees everything in relationship to Krishna. But if one was not a devotee, or if one is a very young devotee, they'd probably get really sidetracked in the Mahabharata, you know. More so than if they read the Srimad Bhagavatam. But still, it's very important, and you know, if it's read in the proper light by a devotee, it's you know, transcendental literature, which is very nice. Okay. So, Śrīla Vyāsadeva stating he's feeling a little bit dissatisfied, reflecting on that, considers, well, I've done everything I should have done, and also, you know, compiled all the literatures and really tried to help the, you know, people in this age of Kali in the best possible way through especially literatures like the Mahabharata. So, he's reflecting, why am I feeling dissatisfied? Well, okay. He's in a proper mood. He's gone through the cyclic succession, properly worshipped the spiritual master, and then worshipped the supreme Lord, the supreme personality of Godhead. That's, you know, approaching the altar of sacrifice, and paid due respect to the Vedic literatures. Handling them very appropriately, very cautiously, not haphazardly. Worship the Vedas means that, here is the sacred teachings coming originally from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to treat them very respectfully and present them properly, and we can't treat this knowledge in a haphazard way. So in that way, worshipped, it's the Vedic knowledge is Sabda Brahma, or the sound vibration. It is as described in the Bhagavad Gita. There's one chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is it the third chapter? Therefore, this food grains are produced from rains are produced from jagya. Jagya is born of prescribed duty, and prescribed duty is born of the Vedas, and therefore the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So Sabda Brahma, it's actually transcendental sound vibration representing the Supreme. Okay. So therefore, because it is the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated within the acts of sacrifice mentioned there in the Vedas, therefore it should be worshipped as we worship the Lord, because it's coming from the Lord. So it's just the way he's treated it very respectfully as representing the Lord. And on a daily basis, performed his daily worship to the Guru and his daily worship of the Supreme Lord, as we do before, we begin our day. We offer our respects to the spiritual master, we offer our respects to the Supreme Lord, and we begin our day. And three times during the day, of course, the Brahmanas will also chant the Gayatri Mantra, to worship the Lord. Light a sacred fire, because we chant Hare Krishna, but Srila Vyasa today may have been lighting some sacrificial fires. I lit two today, so lit two home programs. But in that way. Yep. So he's done everything correctly, very nicely. Therefore he's pondering, why am I satisfied? It's not as if I've done this offensively. I've not offended my Guru, I've not offended the Lord, I've not offended the Vedas, which is coming from the Lord through the Guru. So, why am I feeling this dissatisfaction? And in text number 30 we see that that he's saying he's feeling incomplete, even though fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. So he's done everything to be situated nicely, purely. He's personally following everything that needs to be followed, and setting up everything that for the purification of everyone else that they can follow, and still his feeling incomplete. Alright, now we're at what point does Srila Vyasadeva start to get some clue as to what may have gone wrong? What's that? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, he said that to everyone.
Yeah. And did you have some other point there?
Maybe in chapter 5.
Yeah, so gradually coming to there.
So
that's a fact. So he's starting to consider the essence of religion, and then, you know, following on that train of thought, what does he consider? Then after that, as Nataji pointed out. Yes. Is that where was that? Text 32, is that what you're in the
prayer?
Yeah.
Although yesterday was an empowered divinity, he still felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities of the Lord properly explained.
That's right. So, you know, if we had to answer that question, that looking at verses 26 to 32, why was Vyasadeva not satisfied? How would we answer that? Let's sum up some of those points we've just mentioned there. What else?
What about the aspect of satisfying?
What was that? So far his, you know, Vedic writings had not satisfied the self, is it? Yeah?
So, the first point, at times it creates a little conflict in the mind, saying that, you know, on one hand we say, we know that the Vedic knowledge is coming from the Lord himself, mm-hmm. and then on the second hand we say that the Vedic knowledge does not satisfy the self, does not, you know, go together, hand in hand together. So, I think, I don't know, what I could understand was maybe the Vedic knowledge which, you know, the Shabd Brahman that we would refer to cannot be incomplete to begin with. And just that, you know, what was expected out of Vyasadeva perhaps was to get the gist of that and present that. Instead, he presented the entire thing, which was difficult to understand. Could we put it that way, rather than saying that the Vedic knowledge itself was not complete, or the Vedic, because saying that would be, you know, something coming from, you know, spoken by the Lord is not complete. That's something.
It's karmakanda. And it's not satisfied. Karmakanda doesn't satisfy itself.
Well, there is the within the Vedas, there's also the Upanishads. That is also there, which that is Jnanakanda. And there's also Upasana Kanda of worship. They're all there within what he's written so far. And there's even mention of.
But he doesn't need to be ultimate, I mean, he needs to be you know, the full gen. He doesn't need to know him for Lord and fully satisfied.
Let us not forget that Bhagavatam also was a part of the Vedas.
So,
how can it not be complete? No, it was. He had written the complete Vedas. The complete Vedas were written. He had divided them up. So, Bhagavatam was part of that. Although he, you know, had to, whatever, he rewrote that expanded it or whatever, but it was part of it. I mean, maybe he did not particularly focus on that particular thing because it is expected. Let's say, you know, if you were to, I'll put it in a different way, that for example, there is a scholar, or you know, and you know, he presented with different theories, big theories he's been presented with. But a job of a scholar as such would be to understand that and provide the less intelligent people with the gist of that and focus on the important bits or whatever. So, but in this case, what we see that what the scholar, or in this case, what he has done is he has written the entire Vedas as it is, subdivided into different parts, but never in no place specifically he has, you know, highlighted the core knowledge of the Vedas specifically, which is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Which is what is his shortcoming here. Not that he's not presented that way.
So would you sum that up in these two sentences?
Only these two should. I mean, I don't know whether we can say that the Vedic knowledge does not satisfy self. We do. I don't think we can say that.
Well, let's see what
brought.
Okay, in this verse in 32, it says there that Prabhupada says the vacuum felt by Vyasadeva was not due to. So there's a vacuum. A vacuum is we're talking about a vacuum of satisfaction. The satisfaction which is supposed to be there is null and void. That's a vacuum. Bhagavad Dharma is purely devotional service, and Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations about the personality of Godhead. He felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities of the Lord properly explained. So, then it says that without the transcendental loving service of the Lord, everything is void. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, everything is tangible without separate attempt at fruitive work or empiric philosophical speculation. So, you know, Prabhupada is definitely saying that you can be dissatisfied despite having all of that Vedic knowledge. And in fact, Vyasadeva, what to speak of others who are trying to understand that Vedic knowledge, you got to take it from, he wrote the imagine how much he understood it and practiced it as we described. And he's definitely saying he's dissatisfied. So there's no question that anyone lesser than Vyasadeva would not feel dissatisfied despite all of that Vedic knowledge. So, and of course your point is, how can that be, because that's coming from the Supreme.
And we refer to it as Shabd Brahman as well. When we say Shabd Brahman, are we saying that it is not complete? Are we saying that Shabd Brahman cannot satisfy? Is that what it is meaning?
That's what Vyasadeva's feeling. That's what.
And he's gone.
Well, there you go. Just to thicken the plot.
Again, on text 30, purport, yeah. The last line says, Srila Vyasadeva appeared to have lost the clue,
yeah.
Therefore felt dissatisfied.
Yeah. So he was, you know, he was struggling to find out, the proper thing to do, you know, and the proper path to satisfaction, and therefore he ended up dissatisfied. So you know that's Srimad Bhagavatam is saying that. if Srila Vyasadeva feels dissatisfied with his complete understanding of all that Vedic knowledge, how can anyone else who doesn't even have as much complete understanding or ability to even practice it feel more satisfied than should have yesterday.
I'm not denying that.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, he's understood that, but he's not presented the core of that.
Which is this, these two, he did not show the process of devotional service and not properly glorifying. But because he didn't do that, he's saying that the others doesn't sat, there's no satisfaction of the self. That's the result, because he didn't do that.
But that does not imply that the Vedic knowledge is incomplete. That's what I'm trying to say. It is not implying that. It is what it is implying is he is not presented the core and highlighted it.
We studied that a little bit in the Bhakti Shastri. What verse will we quote from Bhakti Shastri on this point? Om Purnam. Right. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is complete, and everything that emanates from the Supreme is complete. And even though many different complete emanations emanate from the complete, he still remains the complete and perfect whole. Right. So where is the question of incompleteness or dissatisfaction? That is described in that purport, that when our relationship with the Supreme Complete is not established, then we feel incomplete.
Correct.
And as soon as we establish our relationship with the Supreme, we feel complete.
Right.
Because the Vedic knowledge had not properly established that relationship with the Supreme, it was not complete. So Vedic knowledge, which firmly establishes the relationship with the Supreme, is complete and gives complete satisfaction.
Can you explain that does not explicitly told? It may be told, but it's there and there.
Yeah.
Not clearly and definitely for the common man.
That's what I'm trying to say, actually.
To take out the point from there and then all else, they don't have intelligence. People are Kali Yuga. And they're short lived, so they can't read through the Vedas to get to that. So they need something where, like for example, they said the essence has to be given to them.
Yes.
Take the nectar.
Yeah.
So the Vedas was not doing that. So it's not highlighted to them. They never. Where would they read all the Vedas and then reach
actually
the conclusion?
It's actually there. But for the average person, even when Srila Vyasadeva has made things simpler and easier to access, it is still a huge jump for them to connect that knowledge to a direct relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They cannot do that. And because he hadn't made that clear enough, therefore, he was feeling dissatisfaction because
And also there are many great scholars, like we said about Patanjali, they have got having read that now they have lost the real message.
Yeah.
So then what about the common man?
Yeah.
So the message also was not put in such a way that it was standing out, explicit.
Yes.
So that's where maybe they were unhappy.
Yes, definitely.
Because there are people there, scholars, who reading through that have got lost and they have become Mayavadis and they become
even the leaders of those scholars.
It's not the shortcoming of the knowledge itself, it's the shortcoming of the presenter of that knowledge.
He's not explicitly brought out.
He should have a guru.
This is the only way. That is not clearly, definitely. Okay, you can do this also, you can do like that also, you can do like this also. If it's told like that, people get confused.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. That Srila Vyasadeva himself is feeling that he has not properly glorified the Lord. What to speak of what he wants other people to be able to clearly establish their relationship with the Lord. He doesn't feel that he's served the Lord properly. So therefore he's feeling dissatisfied. Until the Lord is happy, then of course, you know, that is the major.
And all he has done is followed in the disciplic succession, whatever is coming from the Lord, he just put it as it is, without intervention. Correct?
So let's. So what principles can we draw so far? Let's.
Just 1 minute. Yeah? Can we take a point from the chapter 5, where neither Moses nor Elijah did
this? Just before we go to.
So we shouldn't use points from that for this question.
Oh, we can, but we're heading that way. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah. What principles can we draw from here so far? Oh, these are the reasons why he's starting to feel that he's not satisfied. So, a principle that can be applied to us. For others,
I think you just spoke of that you know, the Supreme Lord is complete, whatever is coming out of complete, but if the relationship could not be established, then you feel dissatisfaction. That, I think, was the principle there, and that was not very clearly
written. So let's get a principle based on how we find satisfaction, right? Because this is a question, isn't it? Is not satisfaction. There's no satisfaction for Vyasadeva. What is the principle of satisfaction? So, put that in a sentence. Can only come. Alright? That, you know, satisfaction can only be found, only, you know, only comes or only be found, either way, from the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Is that stated somewhere? What's that? Did you say that was 31? Yeah.
He himself analyzes.
Yeah. Well, here it is. Prabhupada says in the purport, the 31, he says, unless one is fixed in the normal condition of devotional service, condition of service, neither the Lord nor the living being can be fully satisfied.
Yeah.
Right. So that's Prabhupada stating that principle, which summarizes that, you know, he did not show the process of devotional service as you described, or did not properly glorify the Supreme Lord, and therefore there was dissatisfaction. And because the principle, and you said he lost the clue. What is the clue? This is the clue, is this principle, that satisfaction can only be found in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Okay? So that was a clue that he lost. That's, he lost that principle. what's the opposite way of saying that? As Prabhupada pointed out in one of those purports. So if that's where you find satisfaction, you know, what is the opposite? Yeah, how does Prabhupada present that?
Can you, like, without the transcendental loving service of the Lord, everything is void?
Everything is void, yes. So that's the principle stated in the other way, right? So. So these are principles, and what is he? Where is that? That is 32. Yeah. All right. So we've derived some principles, because, you know, later on, what we want to look at, of course, is we're going to do a little exercise. Where we're going to discuss these a little bit, just according to our personal lives, of course, and according to, you know, preaching applications. So, you know, that we should be able to answer that question from verses 26 to 32, as to, you know, why Srila Vyasadeva began feeling dissatisfaction. I'm going to rub this off in a second. So if we move into chapter 5. Actually, even so, you know, on this point of just before we move on, there is another important statement, you know, which Srila Prabhupada makes. Relationship to how one can find satisfaction, and it's sort of it's giving us the reasons, you know, why Vedic knowledge, people who pursue Vedic knowledge without coming to transcendental activity of Bhagavad Dharma or devotional service, feel dissatisfied. And it's stated in verse 27, I think it is, that you know, one has to find satisfaction beyond matter. The satisfaction of the heart is to be searched out beyond matter. You know, it's sort of an important statement there. You know, one has to search that out beyond matter. Searching that out beyond matter means that, and we have to come to this, you know, platform of devotional service, of Bhagavad Dham, which is activity for the spiritual soul in relationship to the Supreme Lord, and without that, everything remains void. And, you know, because of these principles here, Vedic knowledge, although complete, may not satisfy the self until we come to that complete understanding. And because Srila Vyasadeva had not properly shown that and not properly glorified the Lord as the goal of our activities through devotional service, therefore these principles weren't revealed. Even though everything else was there nicely within Vyasadeva and within the Vedas themselves. Alright, so let's look at some further reasons for Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction from the verses, purports and lecture quotes of from verses 2 to 9. All right, what is the first thing we might come across? Yeah, he should not have identified the self with the body, the mind, and intelligence. What was that? Yes. He chastised him for thinking on the bodily platform. So, you know, from... we've left off here with this statement, one should need to find satisfaction beyond matter. And Narada is saying that Vyasa is he satisfied? Which is another way of saying you're not satisfied, are you? by identifying with the body and the mind. Alright. What else would we find there? Reasons for Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction. So, yes, you've gone right up to verse 8 there. Yep. So, that confirms, you know, what Srila Vyasadeva was feeling himself. Yep. Right. So he has spent a lot of time with Dharma, Karma, Artha, and Moksha. Now, of course, for instance, Srila Vyasadeva has compiled all the Vedic literatures and then, you know, presented the essence of all that, especially in the Mahabharata, you know, because the Bhagavad Gita is there. And within the Mahabharata, you know, all the principles of Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, you know, many of those principles, there's a lot of description there, which certainly shows Srila Vyasadeva's expertise in Vedic knowledge. So, you know, we can't say that, as in we see in text number 4, well, in text number 3, it describes there that your inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled, and there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences elaborately explained. So his despondency is certainly not due to his lack of you know, Vedic knowledge. we see in the next verse, it describes that he has, as you were saying, delineated the impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived from there. We see in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, is a full deliberation on the impersonal absolute feature. So, we cannot say that Srila Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction is due to a lack of knowledge, since he's written the Mahabharata. We cannot say that his dissatisfaction is due to a lack of realized knowledge, because he has written about the Brahman, impersonal Brahman, in the Vedanta Sutra. And he has realized that. Therefore, it leads us to the conclusion that it is because he has not properly glorified the spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in verse number 8. you know, so, for instance, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes that everything is Vasudeva. And Vedanta Sutra also, you know, describes the... everything is resting upon the Brahman, you know. But although describing that everything is Vasudeva, Srila Vyasadeva hasn't told us a lot about Vasudeva himself. That's the problem. You say, you know, everything is Vasudeva, everything like that. So the next question will tell us about Vasudeva. And that's what he hadn't done. You know, there are little, there are some, certainly some parts, but it is so much information on Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, everything resting upon the Brahman. Who is Vasudeva? So it's not that he hasn't stated it. Bhagavad Gita states very clearly. But still, most people who you know, interpret Bhagavad Gita interpret Vasudeva. You know, Vasudeva is everything, and still they interpret Vasudeva as being impersonal. So therefore, we have to hear, tell us more about Vasudeva, so that we can clearly understand. He is not impersonal, and that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead at that. So he has not done that. Well, again, Krishna displays his universal form, which the impersonalists take as that the universal form, they take it that that is a higher principle than Krishna, who's a personal form. They think that that is a greater display of the all-pervading feature of God. You know, there is Krishna standing on the battlefield, and you know, so he doesn't appear to be all-pervading at all. Whereas the universal form appears to be a much higher form of God being all-pervading. But the fact is that actually, you know, Krishna is all-pervading, and yet he can appear in his you know, personal, original personal form. But people have not understood that. Vasudeva is everything. So they think, yes, this Vasudeva, this Krishna is everything. To see he can manifest his universal form, and even beyond that universal form is the Brahman, the spiritual energy upon which everything is resting. So that is the great supreme God, like that. That's how it would appear, unless it's properly explained. No, 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 it's not like that. Actually, Krishna is the source of all that, therefore he's the greatest. You know, all of those wonderful things is just coming from a spark of his splendor, therefore he's greater than all that put together. And that's not properly explained. it's there, but you know, it's not as clear as it needs to be made. So let's look at the last verse, verse number 9. So there, you know, describes very clearly that you know, although you have broadcast the four principles, Dharma, religiosity, economic development, Artha, Karma is you know, sense enjoyment, Moksha, liberation, although you've described those elaborately, you have not described the glories of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Vasudeva, of course, you know, the very term Vasudeva you know, has that meaning of one who is all-pervading. And but the personal feature of that all-pervading Lord has not been clearly described as being the supreme enough. We see, I think it's in the purport there, that Prabhupada says the root cause of the despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. He has certainly, as a matter of course, given descriptions of the glories of the Lord, but not as many as given to religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. He's not given more importance to the better type of devotional service, and he's more or less improperly used his valuable time, and thus he was despondent. So, we can say, you know, Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha. You say too much, and glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead too little. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, you know, even says avoided deliberately. And we can sum that up, that Srila Prabhupada is saying he's wasted his time. Srila Prabhupada is not pulling his punches. No. Look, so there's several nice quotes amongst, you know, Srila Prabhupada's quotes that you should have. you know, he shows how, you know, there are some quotes for some of the principles that we isolated. For instance, everything is a void without devotional service. There's sort of in that line. There's some quotes. Yes, and Srila Vyasadeva has not really led people to that direction enough. There are different points describing how, when we apply ourselves to Vedic knowledge, we should really you know, inquire about the real goal of life. And you know, we should not be preoccupied with things related to the body and the mind, you know, which are the root causes of all despondencies. Srila Prabhupada mentions that in verse number 5. Also, what other principles? We see there are some other principles here we haven't touched on as to why Srila Vyasadeva felt dissatisfied, or principles that can be applied from this to others in a preaching application as well. Well, we can say, do we have a cloth for this board? Is it? There's some other very important principles here. The dust, with the dust from that little devotee's feet. Yep, come in. Oh, they might need the door open. What are the principles? What's that? No, we've got to find the principles before we preach about them. No, it's sort of in relationship to you know, one of the what was one of the reasons that one of the shortcomings that ultimately led to Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction. Yeah, and why didn't he do that? Yeah? Why did we get lost? Why do we, you know, was that, that's it? Yeah, and why would we do that? He had proper sadhana.
He had the guidance initially from.
Yeah, there's he's he's not actually inquired sufficiently or taken sufficient instruction from Narada Muni. And therefore, actually, Narada Muni comes and he is now giving him more instruction.
How did that happen?
Yes. It's a good question. Let's have a look at some of these quotes by Srila Prabhupada to look at that. Now, in verse number 3... There we go. Okay. Now there's a quote relating to verse 3. Srila Prabhupada says, Jigasitam. A scholar is he who is perfectly inquired from his spiritual master. So here Narada is asking Vyasadeva, Jigipsitam, you are a very perfect scholar. Now, the first word used here is jigasitam. A scholar is he who is perfectly inquired from the spiritual master, inquiry. If one is perfect in his inquiry from the authorized spiritual master, he can write things. Otherwise, what is the use of writing nonsense? Those books will be thrown away after reading, just like the newspaper is thrown away and the other books are thrown away. The Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam you cannot throw away. You cannot throw away. Further on in that quote, he says, Jigasitam aritam cha, so he's quoting the Sanskrit, some of the Sanskrit, that, and not only simply you have inquired, but you have studied fully. There are many inquisitive persons, inquire so many things, but do not study. Reciprocation, there must be study and inquiry, just like a nice scholar in the college, he inquires from the professor, and at the same time studies, so the process of acquiring knowledge is to study and to inquire. Further down, another quote. It says, on the same verse, it says, you are not a fool, you have inquired sufficiently and you have studied. Aditam cha, so that is not that without studying, without inquiry, one becomes elevated. So you have done all these things. He had a spiritual master like Narad, and he was himself Vyasadeva, so everything was first class, but still Tathapi, still Sultjasi, you are lamenting. You are morose. You are morose, you are unhappy, just like you have a Kritata, you have done nothing. So we have to become Kritata. Kritata means one who has finished his job. Kritata. So, you know, here, you know, Srila Vyasadeva, of course, is considered the great scholar. Amongst all scholars, Srila Vyasadeva is literally the leader of all scholars. And yet, you know, we see here that he has to inquire from Narada Muni that, you know, still dissatisfied, the job is not complete, something is lacking, I have, you know, starting to get a glimpse of, you know, that it may be because I've not properly pointed out the glories of the Lord. He's starting to, you know, and he's beginning to inquire for Narada Muni. So we see that even a great scholar has to still approach a spiritual master. You know, one has to study very, very nicely and at the same time inquire from the professor or the spiritual master. Otherwise, one is, as it put here, a scholar is he who has perfectly inquired from his spiritual master. So until the inquiries become perfected, you know, through the spiritual master, one's, you know, not properly situated as a scholar, even such a person as Vyasadeva. So then, you know,
when he decided to take on the task of writing it,
but obviously not sufficiently. Not sufficiently. We have to understand, you know, within, I think it's somewhere within those purports that Prabhupada mentions, you know, that Vyas, his dissatisfaction, you know, the activities that led to his dissatisfaction, were the arrangement of the Lord. You know, so that the Srimad Bhagavatam would be compiled. And therefore we see, you know, and this is a general very common scenario. Not that common that everyone writes the Vedas, but what's common is that we approach a learned person in knowledge, and we may then, you know, do some studies, and then we may, you know, come to some conclusion of that knowledge, so that we can then perform some activities based on that knowledge. But until the process, until we've completely inquired, you know, and derived all the essential knowledge we need from that learned person, you know, the job is not done, or the process is not complete. So even in, you know, in material spheres, we see that, you know, if you want to become a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, a sanitation engineer, you know what a sanitation engineer is? That's the garbage man. Whatever, you know, you have to, you know, inquire how to do that. But especially in spiritual life, because it is, you know, beyond the ranges of the material senses and the mind, so especially in spiritual life. And this example is showing that even Vyasadeva, even if you're Vyasadeva, and in this case, Vyasadeva is actually non-different from the Lord. He's, you know, Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. Even in this case, the principle holds, you must sufficiently inquire from the spiritual master in order to become fully satisfied in transcendental knowledge. So no one can say, no one can find an example that, oh, he didn't, you know, have a spiritual master. So, you know, I am a self-made man of knowledge or woman of knowledge, because everywhere you'll find, and especially in Vedic literatures, that one must approach the spiritual master. So, you know, when you get an example like this, then, you know, who would that person be that is so proud to think, well, Vyasadeva needed to take guidance from a spiritual master to attain, you know, perfection in his knowledge, but I don't. I mean, you know, I'm greater than Vyasadeva. I'm greater than every other person. You know, you'd have to be extremely proud or very foolish to think that, you know, even that person needed, but I don't. You know, I'm better than that. In the same way, in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, we see that Krishna recommends yoga process to Arjuna, and Arjuna says, I cannot follow that, you know, that. And then people in Kali Yuga, you know, they go to the, oh, Arjuna couldn't follow, but, you know, I'm going to go down to Bourke Street and to my yoga class, and, you know, once a week, and I'm going to become a great yogi. You know, it's just, so, and I'm not going to accept a spiritual master, you know, but I'm going to become a great scholar. Yesterday, the compiler of the Vedas couldn't do that, but I will. So that's it, you know, that's an important principle. And that's why he felt dissatisfied, of course, mm-hmm. as part of it.
How can we relate outside power? I mean, let's say, Jesus and Christianity,
yeah.
Yes. How can
that
mean that he was not outside? He didn't have a spiritual master? I never
heard of him. Just out of. Didn't he approach John the Baptist for to get baptized?
I'm not sure. I just
yeah, he was baptized, wasn't he?
Hmm.
He also followed Shastra. He didn't do anything outside of Shastra. Yet. So, you know, it's very difficult to really get a clear picture of his life from Christianity today. You probably get something from the Bible, but even the Bible is not as clear. But, you know, it's there. We see in the case of Socrates, there's someone who's born in a place where, you know, of course, they have their spiritual guides and what have you, because they don't really have a, you know, authorized, bona fide spiritual master. They can come to some level of knowledge. You can understand that you're a spirit soul, that there's something absolute, but you can never quite get a clear picture of it. So, you know. And people who are great scholars and have a, you know, huge propensity to speculate take birth as people like Socrates, Einstein. So therefore, you know, was it Newton who's or they said that, you know, so much knowledge, I've just gathered a few pebbles on the beach, on the shore of knowledge. It's you know, because they don't have a spiritual master. So intelligent, so brilliant, and a life dedicated to searching for knowledge through speculation, but because they don't have a spiritual master, they just find a few pebbles. And they will freely admit it, you know, the honest ones. Others, they're rascals. So all right. So what was your point? Did you? No, that's right. Finish. Yep. Let's write this down. Let's write something down. Make it look like we're doing something. Right. How should we summarize that? Who is the emblem of knowledge? Yes. Was there any more? All right. Now, let's look in the purport, text number 6. There's a very key sentence. You know that the first question in 1:5, the Purvasvajaya, it says, list further reasons for Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction, see verses, purports and quotes. There's a statement in one of Srila Prabhupada's quotes which really summarizes this whole point nicely. It says that even a personality like Vyasadeva has problems. You see that quote somewhere there? That so we have to search out a Mahatma and we have to surrender unto him. This is called disciplic successions. Then our problems will be solved. Otherwise, even a personality like Vyasadeva, he has problems. Even a personality like Arjuna, he has problems. Right? So the principle is we have to search out and surrender to a Mahatma. Otherwise, we have problems. Even if you're Vyas or Arjun. Alright. And we did touch upon previously that we did mention it, but we didn't write it up there, that a very important principle that, you know, Vyasadeva himself was not satisfied, even though he compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Dissatisfied despite the Vedanta Sutra. Okay. What to speak of others? Let's derive a principle. Vyasadeva himself was not satisfied. He was dissatisfied, even though he compiled the Vedanta Sutra. So, of course, how can others who study Vedanta Sutra, such as the impersonalists, ever, you know, claim to be satisfied? It shows that is not possible. You know, just by deriving, an impersonal understanding of Vedic literature through the study of the Vedanta. So what principle can we derive there?
The philosophy must be directed at the Supreme
Personality of Godhead. Yes, so it's not enough just to be a philosopher and scholar, right? Yeah. So if we put it like that, one, it's not sufficient to be a good scholar. I've got too many. You know, or philosopher. What's missing? If that's not sufficient, how do we become satisfied? And as you were saying, we have to do what? Serve God, which means that we have, you know, we have to be a lover of God, really.
You don't think by writing your Vedanta Sutra, God is pleased.
Yeah. That's right. It's not sufficient. That's a great scholarly work. So, and what else does he say? How is the Lord pleased?
You have to write one book and keep glorifying the Supreme God.
Yeah.
Good.
God is satisfied by love. And then what? And then you'll be completely satisfied. Yeah, so God is satisfied by pure love, and then you'll be completely satisfied.
Basically what
I was
trying to say
is, for you to be satisfied, you have to satisfy God. Yes. Someone been eating those texts. I had a whole, I don't know what I'm doing with them. I've got two, I had a whole packet, I must be doing. Oh, here they are, hiding. I knew. Okay. Alright, so, you know, we've looked at three broad categories with a few statements in each. first category, of course, is that satisfaction is has to be searched out beyond matter, through devotional service. Otherwise, everything is just a void. And if we don't, the second thing, of course, if we don't approach a spiritual master, we'll have problems, by not coming to this ultimate conclusion. And the proof is, of course, that even Vyasadeva, who wrote the Vedanta Sutra, he was not satisfied being a great scholar in the Vedas or in personal Brahman. And that proves the point that only by coming to the point of devotional service and love of God can we really be satisfied. Yeah? So, it's three broad principles there. It could almost be summarised in one paragraph, and you'd probably be wise to do that. The first point is that without devotional service, everything is a void. Yes. Right? That's the first point. And there are, sentences that can go sandwich that main point. And to understand that point, you have to approach a spiritual master. And until you do, you'll have problems. And the proof of that is that Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra, and still he had problems. So if he had problems, then what to speak of others? That's basically the whole section. what I'm going to get you to do now is, yeah, in this part, those parts. Yeah.
That's why Nandam was telling the other day, it's such an important thing you have not given to people. The devotion service is so important. I mean, this glorifying the devotion service, okay, it's so important that devotees who are actually in the devotional path, if they fall down, there's no loss because the God is...
Oh, that comes up later.
No,
yeah.
Later, but
we haven't covered that yet.
So that doesn't, we don't bring that up because, again, he says it in the same relation. That this devotional service is so important, you have not given that knowledge,
yep,
to the Lord, to the,
yep,
people. Mm. So maybe that's why you're dissatisfied. Because Narada Muni is relating all that to Vyasadeva.
Yes.
You're not given this important, you're not glorified, the name of the Lord is so important, you're,
yes,
not glorified that.
Yep.
You're not given this devotional service, which is so important. So all that need not be mentioned then.
No. So far we've just got a nice, you know, paragraph which sums up three broad categories of, you know, Srila Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction and the proof that these principles apply to everyone else. Now, you know, later we'll look at the fact that, okay, one should take the devotional service, so then the immediate thing is, oh, if I'm, you know, we're heading in this point, you know, the direction that I'm supposed to take to devotional service, we'll immediately begin to think, well, what if I fail or what have you. So therefore the verses that you're talking about would say, no, go ahead anyway, there's no question of failing. You know, even failing in devotional service is success, but even success as a, you know, a materialist is actually failure. So those verses go on from there. It's a slightly different point. Right. And we'll discuss that next week. Alright? So we've covered here nicely the dissatisfaction of Srila Vyasadeva. And that's sufficient to answer those two questions. The last one at the end of chapter 4 in Purva Svajaya, and the first one in chapter 5 of Purva Svajaya. And what I'd like you to do now is to do a little exercise. Now, just, I'm going to hand out some sheets. Can I? Where's our Hare Krishna? Sorry, I didn't get to your place during the week. I'll speak to you later. Where's our attendance sheet? Somewhere here. Here, attendance sheet. There. Yep. Everyone put in that. Okay. And remember to put in for last week as well. Because I don't think I passed it around last week. So this week and last week. So everyone here is ticked off for this week and last week. Anyone who's also got a red dot beside their name, everyone who has a red dot beside their name who hasn't got a paid, we've got Seema. Yeah, he did, and that was... You just took one copy, and that was where's yours? You on the same page or on a different page? Yeah, okay. Did you write paid?
Yes,
Is that
paid? 23.
That's under Vikas.
That's me.
Oh, yeah, it's under Velu. Oh, Velu. Have you paid for your book?
Yeah,
you did? So you haven't written paid. Oh, you've just put a tick there. So anyone who's paid for their books, write paid beside there. There should be a red dot and there should be paid. Just pass it around. Has anyone not paid? They're not paid. That's right. I've got the treasury chasing me. I'll end up paying. Yeah, that's good. Alright. So just have a look at your name. Make sure if you've paid it, you've written paid, and if you've not paid, that you pay. You don't have to do it this week, but just keep it in mind, because we're a very efficient movement here when it comes to this sort of thing.
Thank you.
All right. Now it's paid. No, okay. And you've written?
It was already written.
Has already written, but not. I don't think it was. Okay. Bailu, you've got paid. You've paid. Yeah. You just put it in the wrong column. Okay.
You wrote in my column.
Okay. Is there anyone here who's got books who hasn't paid? Anyone here? Abel? Yeah. A few conversations. Don't mind me. Is there anyone here who's got books who thinks they haven't paid? Yourself? You haven't paid. Get him! I'll see you next week. Don't leave. All right, what's that?
He won't pay.
Looks like we're going to have a fight after class. What's that? Do you have to pay? I think what will happen is that for anyone who doesn't pay, I'll end up paying. Yeah. So, If you feel that, you know, for the full-time devotees, that the temple may pay for you, see them and get them to give you the $25 and bring it to me, I'll give it back to them anyway. But one way or another, we have to sort it out. Is that all right? Yeah. Okay. that was part of it. Yeah. This is the exercise now. I'm going to pass these out. We want three groups. Okay. All right. Shall we have a ladies group? Yep. What I'll do is I'll pass them along. Take one and just pass them along, because they're good to keep, because they've everything we've discussed, you know, summarised on that page anyway. So keep those. All right. First of all, so we've got one group there. We've got one. Is that one or one and a half? Women outnumber the men. How many people we got? That's all right. So look, just yeah. Do you want to? Yeah. Maybe everyone here. Do you two want to work here, or are you happy to work there? Okay. Yeah, is that all right? These five, yeah? These five, those five, and these five. Look at that.
Five and a half.
Five and a half. That's all right. They need extra help. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to get you to take some of those principles that we've looked at and do a presentation on how you would apply that in your in preaching application. But before we do that, maybe we could just discuss a little bit how we could apply, how we can, should, or might, you know, in the future apply some of those principles just on a personal level. Group three.
Group three.
Your group. Yeah. You're grade 2. So there's two things you can do. You know, in your presentations, if you could show both aspects, how these principles are applied personally and how they're applied in a preaching application, and you know, after you you know, do your presentation, I'd like you just to, whoever's speaking or whether you all speak, say something, but perhaps one, you know, to actually explain, you know, significantly, you know, the application on both counts, preaching, and you know, some of the main things that you've discussed, how these things are really important to you personally, your preaching. You have plenty of time, but let's limit that. You know, take 15 minutes and 10 or 15 minutes. What's that? You can do some, all, any.
If all of us picked up the same one, then we'll end up presenting the same one. Because we'll have to have different ones. Group one is less anyways, because they took three, they took two, so one is for us.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, but
yeah.
Two groups, not three, and this is only got three groups.
Okay.
Alright.
Yeah, let's do. Yeah, we should do that. So you're gonna. Alright, let's do that. You do principle one. Yeah? You do principle two, and you're doing principle. So you're doing principle three. Yeah. Alright. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Alright. Anyone still confused besides me? Okay, she's on the border. I just take it off hold, press that record button, and that just pauses it.
No? Press the save button.
Ah, that's right, yeah, I knew it was saying. Just push it in. So we're going to ask group one to group three to come up forward and do their presentation. You can. Everyone has it, so it's okay. Yeah. You know, you can just give us an intro and what have you. No, just you can speak an intro as to what you know,
what the group is,
without giving too much away, and then go into your presentation.
Okay.
All right. How are we going up there? Oh, yeah? Okay.
So, I'm from group three.
Nice and loud.
Yes, and this basically, this is the quote from Prabhupada.
Yes.
It seemed to be here. So, yeah. Here Prabhupada is saying how the compiler, Vyasadeva, is dissatisfied and how there's nothing to be so proud about writing the Vedanta Sutra. One should develop love for Krishna. And this is the highest stage. So the personal application is that we should first study Srila Prabhupada's books, Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, rather than Srimad Bhagavatam, rather than directly diving into Vedanta Sutra. because if you read Vedanta Sutra directly, it doesn't have any commentary by, I mean, past acharya, previous acharyas have written a commentary, but there's nothing written by Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada presents in such a way that we can understand in the modern context. So we should rather study Srila Prabhupada's books first. And the second point is, Vedanta Sutra does not help one to attain the transcendentally normal stage of devotional service, because it focuses more on the impersonal Brahman. There's very less description of the glories of the Lord or the activities of the Lord. It's all in sutras. Whereas we see Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire 10th canto is about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And another personal application is, we should not aspire to be a scholar, rather we should aspire to develop love for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, we do not want armchair philosophers. And on the other hand, there's the gopis who are not scholars, but they're simple village girls, but they've got the highest love for Krishna by rendering devotional service. And by doing that, they've actually realized the conclusion, they've reached the conclusion of the Vedas. So the point is that we have to aspire to develop love for Krishna rather than become a scholar. And as it's, you know, Vyasadeva experienced himself, he was not satisfied himself by the compilation of Vedanta Sutra. So if he is not satisfied, what to speak of us? You know, what to speak of us, because if we read the Vedanta Sutra. And the preaching application, that we should read the essence of the Vedanta Sutra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is recommended by Srila Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Sutra, and again suggested by Narad Muni. So it's best to read the conclusion of the Vedanta Sutra, which is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And again, the same point, that it's hard to relish the nectar of life, because Vedanta Sutra does not glorify the Supreme Lord sufficiently. Also, Krishna, another preaching point is, Krishna is not pleased by a scholarly attempts to understand Vedanta Sutra. Rather, Krishna is pleased by loving devotional service. And the rendering of devotional service is the highest stage rather than to become a scholar. These were some of the points.
Is that so? That's personal and preaching application.
This yeah. Was preaching. Was yes.
Some questions from the audience.
I found that in your there is a tipping point here. When we are talking about the personal application,
is a challenge.
Not to read Bhagavatam, not to start from Bhagavatam.
Sorry, say again.
When you were telling about the personal application, you were saying we should not start with Bhagavatam. Whereas in preaching, you are saying we should start with Bhagavatam.
No, we didn't mention. We said we should study Srila Prabhupada's books.
We should not start from Bhagavatam.
No, I didn't say that. I said we should start from Prabhupada's books.
Well, I have everything recorded here.
Prabhupada said four books are very important to read: Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So these are the.
And he said Srimad Bhagavatam, and
you're
also
in yeah, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, CC, teaching of the Lord Chaitanya.
Of course, Bhagavatam is
an ideally good to start from Bhagavad Gita, but you can go straight to Bhagavatam also.
Any other questions or comments? All right, group number two.
Okay. second group had we were reading through these points, and we concluded that it's all about the importance of submission to, inquiry from, and acceptance to the of the spiritual master. All these three points. Why is it important? Now, when we were talking about preaching application and personal application, we realized that there is not really a distinct difference. To be able to preach, you have to first personally apply. So the same point, you just use it in two different ways. So, for example, to be able to say somebody, you have to accept spiritual mastery, you have first to do it. Or, you know, to really have the power of saying it. So for the personal application, we just simply said that we have to accept, inquire, and study under the guidance of spiritual master to be able to properly understand Shastra, apply it in our life, and then we can start preaching. Then when we, to, again, now the same, the proper points about why should we do it, they're related to both personal and preaching application. So we were writing the points, and then at the end we kind of made the numbers the way they should be going presented. So the first point, of course, we have to understand that we have to inquire and study Shastras, which are the books that are telling us about the importance of connecting with and understanding our relationship with the spiritual, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then that's the first thing. Then why do we do that? Is to achieve the satisfaction. And we already concluded previously in our class, we were talking about satisfaction, and we understood that satisfaction is coming from connecting ourselves with the authoritative source, or actually with the Supreme Personality of God. That's the only way to achieve the satisfaction. Now, to also understand this, it's easy to understand that there is so many learners course today in this world that are studying really hard, do all of their life, they're just basically studying and trying and acquiring knowledge, but still they are not changing the world. We still have so much trouble. Because most of the people, let's say like that, are not understanding the importance of this point, that all of this, what is happening in material world, is just material things that is happening by the three modes of material nature, and to go above it and start getting some satisfaction, you have to raise about these three modes and understand our connection, understand that we are not body, we are a soul. Then we can understand that this same point from in purports, we can understand that even Vyasadeva and Arjuna, they were not fully satisfied. They had to accept the spiritual master to really get the essence. For example, Vyasadeva, he compiled all the Vedas, and he was still feeling the vacuum because he didn't write the main point, the importance of devotional service. Then his spiritual master appears, and then he tells him what's the importance, and kind of directs him. And that's basically why we need the spiritual master. You can read the books, but maybe you will miss, the essence which comes between the lines. And this essence is presented by the spiritual master, which also not only gives us this essence, he also, in a way, relates us through the cyclic succession directly with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given this spiritual knowledge. So there is different ways of why we have to do it. And then the last point, after we understand that we have why and the fact that we have to accept the spiritual master if we want to properly understand the scriptures, is also the spiritual master has to be bona fide spiritual master. You can't accept somebody who is a foolish person from the street and just telling you, I know everything about God, so just follow me. I think that's what we understood from this.
Any questions or comments?
The last point, it says, otherwise
even a personality like Vyasadeva, he has problems. Even a personality like Arjuna, he has problems, okay? Which means they're saying great personality has problems, okay?
Yeah.
We as conditioned souls, definitely we have problems too. Now that is not being addressed in your personal application. Just if you take shelter of your bona fide spiritual master, do you mean to say that all the problems are eradicated?
No.
How do you address problems? Personal problem in your personal application. Say there's a spiritual problem. So I cannot chant, but I have some problems. I cannot follow the principles. So how that is addressed in your spiritual application, personal application?
It's really simple, it's all up to you. And the thing is we have to do it.
Yeah,
spiritual master can't do it for us. He is just there to give us guidance. So we can approach him and say, look, of course, you can't just come and say, look, I have a problem. You have to, you know, approach humbly and explain that you have a problem and that you need a guidance. And the spiritual master, because he has much more knowledge and also connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and can understand our condition, he can give us a proper advice. You know, you should chant, try to chant in a certain way, try different methods. Then after your chanting is better, you will get the taste, you know, to do some more service and associate with devotees. So he will guide us. But problems are all the time present here because
so
we are
perhaps you may have to include on the personal application.
Please,
the personal application I'm talking, not on the preaching side, that
I think
you have to take and guidance from
And I think it's a covered in partly because it says that satisfaction comes from connection with authoritative source and Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is basically authoritative source is the spiritual master. And satisfaction, we don't have satisfaction because we have problems. So as soon as we would not have problems, we would be happy.
Here, here. Very good. Thank you. All right. Can we just ask group three, because we're running out of time now. Because
when you said about knowledge, when you're reading some scriptures, I think somebody mentioned that when we are preaching, also we learn. From preaching.
Who's coming up?
We're doing question one as an interactive example. We're going to demonstrate the preaching and the personal application all in one by being in a doctor-patient relationship. And this is the doctor and I'm the patient.
Very appropriate, yeah.
So I come into the doctor to say, I'm not very happy. I'm really not happy. And I want you to help me.
What can I do for you?
Well, I was very fat. I was 120 kilos. And that's because I was eating a lot, eating fruit all the time to make me happy. But it didn't make me happy. It made me sad because I got very fat.
Okay.
And so then I did a lot of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I got health problems because I was exercising all the time and I was tired, and then I got thin, and now I'm thin and still not happy. What can you do to make me happy? What's wrong? How can you help me? I'm thin and I'm not happy.
So you're fat and you're eating because you're not happy. Put in a lot of effort to become thin, and that should not make you happy.
Not at all.
Okay. So what do you think will make you happy?
Good job, lots of money, going out, party, friends, all those things. That's why I wanted to get thin.
Okay, but then now you are thin. You can do all of that. And you think you are going to be able to, you're still not happy.
I need more money to go out.
Okay. Since you said a true incident that happened, just share it with you. I think just about a year back, there was a teenager, 19-year-old teenager, who got in tax lotter million
$10 million. And she was said, oh, I'm the richest person. She was very happy. She went with her boyfriend all over the world. And in what, 2 years, she spent all the money. And she became pregnant, and her boyfriend had left her. So there was she. She had all the money. And after 2 years, what was she left with? No money. She was pregnant with a child and no boyfriend. Do you think she's happy?
For a little while she was happy. But I wanted to be happy for a long time. Yeah. I was happy when I was eating and eating lots of food, but it didn't last.
Neither is money going to be making us happy for a long time.
What will make?
So let's say that we have been thinking on a little bodily matter platform. Matter cannot make us happy. Shall we think on another platform to make us happy?
What platform was that?
The spiritual platform, we call it.
I don't know anything about that platform.
Okay. I've got a suggestion. Just come to our Hare Krishna temple and you can and we'll take you through a process by which you can be happy.
Hare Krishna. Is that one of those Hindu gods?
Yes.
There's lots of them. How do I know which one to go to? Why Krishna? There's lots of Hindu gods.
Yes. Krishna is a principal god. He is a supreme personality. All are demigods. When we worship the supreme personality, Krishna, we satisfy all the other demigods too. It's like, suppose when you want to water a plant, would you water the individual leaves and stem or just water the root? Which would you water? Yeah, when you water the roots, you know that the trunk gets water, the stem gets water, the leaves get water, the flowers get water. So similarly, if you worship Krishna, who's the supreme or he's the main god, all the other gods will be automatically worshipped and satisfied. So you come to our Hare Krishna temple.
What will happen?
And you can attend our evening, Saturday evening program, Sunday evening program. You can have a nice feast. You can have, you know, you wanted a feast. A beautiful feast. And then you can have dancing and kirtan.
So I'll be happy.
You will be, just try it out. And you will be, and just try with it. This gives you happiness. I can give you a small book. Perfect
okay.
Questions and perfect answers of our spiritual master Prabhupada. Just have a read. Come down. I'll be there and we can be talking more.
Can I come back and see you next week?
You will come. And I'll see you at the temple.
Thank you.
It's at 197 Times
Okay, so you all did very nice. You all covered the points very well. That was very good because you took her thoughts away from her body and towards Krishna, and she immediately forgot all her bodily problems. But so next week, if you can read to the end of chapter 9. I'm just seeing if anyone's listening. Can you read to the end of chapter 6? What is it? Oh, okay. And some are going. All right. Rath Yatra, what? So next week, how many people are going to? Yeah. All right. And the Rath Yatra.
Well, we need that, but I mean, we have to listen.
What to do? The what's that?
Okay, the week following is not anything. I mean, the Rath Yatra is on Sunday. It's not on Saturday. Sorry. The
Rath Yatra
is on the 29th, which is a Sunday.
So it's just next week?
Just next week, yeah.
All right. Those who think we should postpone for 1 week, raise their hands. You know, so who thinks that our next class should be in 2 weeks' time? Put their hands up. Okay, who thinks that our next class should be in 2 weeks' time rather than next week? Put their hand up. That'll be those going to the retreat, naturally.
Sorry, I'm not putting up my hand on
principle. Yeah. And those questioning that on principle?
Yeah.
One? Anyone else? Yourself? Yeah? What is that?
The principle is, if they're going to be at a retreat,
yes,
at the spiritual retreat, which are not as well attended, do we call them up as well? And it is legitimate for the individual who wants to go to
there.
If you call it up, just ask everyone else's program.
No, yeah, I agree. So, let's see. What I want to do between now and 2 weeks' time is to have covered the rest of chapter 5 and the rest of chapter 6. And I think what I'll do is I will have a class for next week. I will bear in mind that many people aren't here, and so, you know, keep that in mind. Those people who aren't here should still listen to the the talk on the net, and they should still do their homework. And then the following week, you know, we should be concluding. We can do a revision of what we discussed next week, and we can then continue on and conclude. Basically what we're looking at is Srila Vyasadeva will give his instructions to Narada will give his instructions to Vyasadeva based upon solving his dissatisfaction, and Narada Muni gives his life story to as an example. That's really what we're covering. So you need to read up to the end of chapter 6. After that, it's a different subject, the Drona. So, and we will cover that over the next 2 weeks. I'll bear in mind that many people won't be here next week, but I'll also be keeping in mind that you'll actually listen to it, and you should be able to get everything you need from listening to that. And in the meantime, although you're not present at the talk, you know, you should still be reading through, trying to answer the Purva Svajaya questions like that. Is that right? Okay. But, you know, I won't be racing too far ahead in things that, you know, next week that'll make it difficult for you, but we'll still be having the class, and we'll be covering things in such a way that you can get what you need by hearing it and doing your study. But it's better we do push on to some degree. All right? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.